Frances has found her soul, I thought, or heard inwardly. She is her real self now. From this pinnacle of achievement I did not, therefore, expect to have any more communication. Thus I was astounded when, early in September 1967, I became aware again of Frances' vibrations. For a few days I had known in my inner self that a presence was about me. This is always revealed to me by the hushed expectancy with which I break off my ordinary everyday chores. This consciousness can arise at any time of the day. It seems, then, that I am switched into another world, another dimension. Sometimes a messenger comes with the answer to an unspoken query, sometimes I experience a sense of great peace and oneness. But at length I felt sure that this was Frances and that she wished to write again. One evening I took my pen and notebook, composed myself and sat quiescent awaiting the message. Nothing happened. I decided that I must have been mistaken. But again came the sense of urgency. This went on for a few days. Finally I telephoned a member of our own special meditation group which Frances and I had founded 8 years before and which we still carry on. I asked for help. Will you and the other members tune in and ask that, if there is a communication to be made, that my channel may be cleansed and cleared so that Frances can reach me? I asked. They promised their prayers and their thoughts. The following weekend, when I was eating my Sunday lunch and listening to the radio, my thoughts and attentions entirely occupied with the news, I stood up, went over to my desk, picked up pen and notebook and switched off the radio. Frances. Her name rang in my mind. I sat down and began to write, with my half-eaten lunch on the table beside me. I finished transcribing the words that had come into my mind and read them through. They came from Frances, without a doubt. This was the first of the scripts that follow. They came spasmodically. I could see that they were different in content from the former communications. Frances had indeed stepped forward and upward. Her thoughts were more confident. She had found her true place. She was a soul reborn. Confirmation that this was so was given me later in the same month. On 20th September I was fortunate to have a private sitting with a well-known and excellent sensitive, Mrs. Lillian Bailey. This sitting had been booked anonymously for almost 4 months, but it is interesting that it materialized at this special time. After encouraging messages of a personal nature from my husband and other dear ones, and directions about the book already published, The Dissolving Veil, and others to be published, I asked if my friend was present. The answer came without pause. "This is a lady and she has stepped back while others communicated," said Mrs. Bailey. "Wait a minute. She is a little giddy, as she is taking on the conditions with which she left this life. She had a malignancy which finally spread over her body and she passed in a coma." We sat quiet for a moment, then the sensitive said, "That is over now and she is well and happy." She gave the name Frances and added some called her Fanny. This was true as the reader can see for himself in the short biography I have added to this work. Her students in Africa called her Fanny. She knew this and it amused her, so that I was not surprised when she added, via the sensitive, "I am still the same Fanny." Mrs. Bailey described Frances as having very lovely eyes, large, luminous and grey. Those who knew her will testify that her eyes were beautiful. She is speaking of a book. She is very much in this book. In fact, she is writing it, Mrs. Bailey went on, and I thrilled at the confirmation. "You often think of her." Then she gave other facts by which Frances could prove her identity. Presently Mrs. Bailey's guide spoke solemnly, "This lady has found her soul." I felt joyful. "You must not expect her around. She has gone on, but she will be sending through to you from time to time. She now has a more rapid rate of vibration than before. Because your own rate of vibration is rapid, it is easy for her to come to you from time to time, but not all the time. She has not gone out of your life. She has found the wondrous beauty of life beyond her capability of telling you. She is trying to say, what man has created in the spheres is beyond anything man has created on earth. She is now in the creative sphere." How true was this I was to realize in the scripts that came through again in the following October, the last on her birthday, Loth December. They radiate a spiritual attainment that is the spirit of hope itself to me, and I trust, to those who read them. Here then are the last scripts written from a higher sphere. Second series of scripts, 3rd of September 1967. I recall once your solemn remark, I would rather talk than eat. That day we had been talking. One of our long sessions, do you remember, a mutual friend was debating about joining the church's fellowship for psychical and spiritual studies. By the way, I now think that the second adjective should be mystical, and we felt that it was the absolutely right and only thing for her to do, to guide her future work. In your little study we talked, discussed, formulated pros and cons, even concentrated our thoughts to help her to see the right course. That was a day of talk and it ended. Do you recall, in our hearing, that the necessary step had been taken? An interesting and exciting day. I did not fully appreciate then the power and scope of mind communicating with mind, as now am I do. Nor the reality and purpose of the soul mind infiltrating its knowledge of the next step in the divine plan. Then I saw through a glass darkly, but now, at least more clearly, without the veil of the personality shrouding the truth which the soul knows but which the earth-born entity refuses to accept. You would rather talk than eat. That still amuses me. Perhaps that is why I want to let you know that here we talk and talk, though we do not need to eat in the same sense in which we took food into our bodies in the earth life. Yet our talk is different. Here our conversations consist of a communing. Mind speaks to mind. On earth we made sounds, formulated words with varying vibrations or with different meanings, and we employed tonal emphasis to express our purpose. In this further life, speech as sound is not needed. Vibration is everything. It is sufficient that we formulate and breathe out a strong thought for this to communicate itself to other minds. We give and receive thought impressions. They carry our true meaning, so that deceptive words cannot imply other than what we think, as is the case with much of the word sound of the personality. What a pity, you will say, that this is not the common order in earth life, where idle talk can cause strife and bitterness. When, therefore, in the course of my communications to you I make use of the words I said, he said, you will realize that I am merely reiterating a turn of phrase which was usual in my personality life, and which you, and those who read this, will appreciate, because you are accustomed to it. But in very truth I now live in a state of deep communications. My mind is caught up into the tenor of greater minds. I am enabled, though not fully as yet, to listen to the wisdom distilled from advanced sources by both individual question and answer by group teaching. For I have now passed on from my spate of service in the home to becoming one of a group, in other words, to take my place as a newcomer, a very humble, ignorant one, in what I like to call an extension group. This is a group working in what you would term mysticism and what we here ennoble by the title of reality. This is only a name to differentiate it from the numbers of other groups which form themselves into working companies for varying motives, for example groups for science and scientific development, groups for medicine and healing techniques for the human body, groups to study the projection of a method for a wider reach of the human mind, groups for evolutionary world patterns, for the study of the creative plan, for the animal and mineral kingdoms, and more advanced groups for reconciliation of the known history of the human race, Akashic records, with present and future trends, and for possible alignment of plans to advance evolution of animal man to spiritual man. There are, of course, states of being and awareness and groups of advanced entities far beyond my comprehension, for in my Father's house are many mansions. Suffice it for one who has struggled and failed often to behold the light clearly on earth, to have found a niche where those who have beheld and are ever beholding can impart the richness and depth of their wisdom to a searching soul. You would rather talk than eat. For me now in my new state, talk is food. Communion with the group and with the great souls at its center is my nourishment, my bread and wine, my staff of true life. 11th September. Expansion. That is the key word now in this phase of my existence as a soul. We still live in an expanding universe, and I emphasize the word still because we always have inhabited this world, and the death of the physical sheath only serves to clear our vision. The world of the physical is expanding, changing endlessly, though most souls in that state of physical existence cannot make the link with the ephemeral personality strong enough to be able to realize that expansion. Even when the personality which, contrary to some beliefs, does survive death in a more attenuated form, is released into conscious expansion, it still exists, in an entity which had become deeply sunk into the illusion of material existence, on which has never developed the mental body of thought, nor made any contact with the soul. This new state of existence can be one of extreme difficulty and confusion. This explains why there are differing states or planes of expansion here, as I tried to show in my former communications from the home. The shadow lands do exist for those who cannot accept release from the imprisoned self, and in these shadows, the poor entities remain until they themselves wish to find other and lighter abodes. We always possess a soul, body, or, can I put it another way, a soul extends out to each of us. But for millions of those in physical incarnation, the link with the soul body is so ephemeral as to be almost non-existent. Thus, on arrival here, after the physical change called death, such entities find themselves naked to their brethren. That does not mean without clothing in the physical sense, but minus the protective and creative vibrations of the soul. It is as though they lacked an outer skin. Also, they no longer feel in command of themselves or their situation. They are lost and confused, therefore a prey to unprogressed entities who lurk in the shadows. Sometimes they feel still bound to familiar scenes of their earth life. Sometimes they exist in a semi-conscious dream, whilst helpers and loved ones await their return to awareness. The duration and density of this state must necessarily depend on the reality of materialism to them. That is the glamour of earth life, the illusion of the temporal state. A good man or woman, kindly, unselfish, seeking God during life, yet without knowledge or understanding of survival, has nothing to fear. His good deeds have already attracted those who can guide and help him to adjust to these new conditions and, under instruction, he will learn the aspirational approach to the soul. That brings me to what I am trying to convey of expansion in this realm. The soul expands its knowledge and wisdom into the surviving personality. This process may be disseminated over long periods of Earth time, sometimes even hundreds of your Earth years, according to the progression, or non-progression of the entity, but always there are brethren of the way to assist one who desires progress. The desire originates in the entity itself after reparation has been made for wrongs done and existing lower passions have been cleansed, healed and released. When partial cleansing has been effected, the next step towards light is service, and many dear souls spend their transition stages in service to those still living in the hells of their own creation. Such service, voluntary and compassionate, strengthens the link with the waiting self. Yet always that self waits to expand into the entity. There are many facets to such expansion. Loving service is but one. The progressing entity is still in need of education into that knowledge and wisdom which the soul possesses, and for this purpose, numbers of groups exist here and, I am led to believe, function on every plane. The progressing entity is drawn by the law of attraction to a group progressed to that stage which will express, for him, the intensity of awareness which he is now capable of receiving. All is expansion here, but expansion in stages. This law is exact. No entity can propel itself forward into a group until its emotional, mental and spiritual expansion at least is comparable with the fringe of that group's awareness. This is an important statement. Think it well through to its conclusions. Here, illusion, glamour and self, deception are of no avail. One reveals what one is. One advertises oneself even in one's apparel. The mask has been shed with the physical body. The developing light body, its dimness or its brilliance, is apparent, especially to members of the group to which the quality of such light permits graduation. 13th October. In my last communication to you, I emphasized the thought one reveals what one is. one advertises oneself even in one's apparel. Of course, if you examine an Earth personality, the phrase holds good on that level also. Clothes revealeth man. Instinctively when in the body we form judgments of people whom we met by their appearance at first, that is, the brightness or dullness of their dress, the choice of color, style, their smartness or lack of neatness. As above so below, the rules hold. Only on this level of consciousness dress and style are not created by those who lead fashions. We create that which clothes, that is surrounds us, from the residue of our thoughts, words, acts and aspirations which we have brought over with us. One begins to learn, and to apply, this law of creation from the moment of awareness of one's survival in another dimension. Sometimes there is considerable space from the moment of withdrawal from the physical body to the moment of awareness, such a space depending for its duration, as we have already mentioned, on the familiarity or non-familiarity of the entity with life after human transition, with belief or non-belief in persisting consciousness, the strength and tenacity of materialistic concepts and, of course, the records of the life just ended. But when such awareness becomes, so to speak, settled, then dawns the realization that one clothes oneself. During the first stages of this new and rather exciting consciousness, the pleasure of creating costumes and colors fulfills a need and is often much enjoyed. On the other hand, a dress which had acquired meaning on earth will be assumed, sometimes for the satisfaction of the soul, sometimes as a penance, and sometimes for the joy or peace the wearing of it had afforded the soul. During my service in the home I dressed myself in the habit of the order to which I had belonged on earth and in which, most of my fellow servers had also been professed. This was necessary to me for various private reasons, though during some phases of this experience, I allowed myself the pleasure of creating the well-remembered colors and fashions of my later earth years. At last came the opportunity to pursue the progress onwards which I so eagerly desired. By similarities of mind and aspiration I was drawn towards a group. Eagerly I communed with them. My joy was deep and strong when I realized that I had, indeed, found my own group, even though I knew myself to be only on the outer fringe of their activities. And here may I emphasize the value of the group consciousness which we had practiced and struggled to attain together. The groove which we had forged into our consciousness of group responsibility at soul level, of unity at the center, of group growth of the divine qualities into our composite whole, all this was of inestimable help in my entry into, and understanding of, the law of group work. Gradually I became aware of my fellows as arrayed in colors as in garments, and by the depth or brightness or soberness or brilliance of their surround I came to know, not only their characters, but their individual advance into the spiritual realms. This was indeed most revealing, yet humbling. I saw that now I must discard the habit to which I had clung. It had served its usefulness. I must wear what I am as a garment. The thought was terrifying. What was I? Dare I stand before my group companions in the new habit of my thought? Would the colors be somber or bright? Long and earnestly I talked with others who were in very much the same predicament, and I meditated earnestly on what I wanted to be, that such may be presented in truthful light about me. This is a new stage. I am still a neophyte. It is the preparatory stage. Concentration before meditation in the earthly technique, of working down into oneself to discover what one really is, the utterly honest summing up of one's faculties both mental and aspirational, and then letting forth of whatever light has dawned, into a shape. Let your light so shine has a solid meaning here. Gradually the garment evolves, the color settles, and you are arrayed as you really are. You have assumed your light. In other words, the surviving personality is reunited with at least a part of the true soul body. Life excites you. Mind grows into clarity, expansiveness, creativeness. You are. You live. You can now take your rightful place in the group, albeit only on the outer ring. Your ascent into consciousness has begun. You are clothed in raiment of light as your fellows. Now your light can mingle with their brilliance and become one in intensity. thought and aspiration grow into joy and ecstasy. Channels of wisdom and knowledge open to you, beauty becomes a living reality. This is the breakthrough I had longed for when in the physical body. It never manifested in intensity then. Flashes of awareness but served to deepen the hunger of the personality for the soul's radiance. Perhaps this clarity of consciousness is not possible in the materialism of earth life. I cannot know the answer to that. All I realize now emphasizes the reality and practicality of Jesus' teaching. Within is the kingdom of heaven. Seek ye first the kingdom of heaven and all these things shall be added unto you. All was within me then, as now, but the veil of glamour and illusion barred my sight, as it still veils reality for most dwellers on the earth. Dear friend, this is but the initial stage of a journey into light, during which the surviving entity is gradually reunited with the whole soul. Step upon step into greater light lies ahead of me, yet truly it suffices. One step enough for me. 14th October. In your mind I recognize questions about the group. How did I know that I belonged to this particular group? How did I contact the group? What credentials had I which enabled me to be accepted by the other members? I realize that I too would have wanted to know the answers had I received such communications from another mind working in a different state of consciousness. I will endeavor to answer as clearly as I can. I will take your second query first. How did I contact this group? This was not a case of contacting, as though, for the first instance, this group. From time immemorial it seems that I have been attached to it. Now this is a reunion. Is this such a mystery? Every soul has its place in the divine scheme of living. Every soul belongs to a group and forms an integral part of a group soul. I do. You do. The meanest beggar in the street does, the greatest genius does. A group soul is constituted of souls at individual levels of progress, each complementing the others to make a whole. One is part of a group soul as one is part of a family in the physical sense. A family relationship may be temporary, but a soul relationship is eternal. The question of twin souls, about which much nonsense and speculation is made on earth, can be explained by the hypothesis of two souls belonging to the same group but drawn close in harmony because they are at equal stages of progression and because they have advanced conspicuously together. This gives them similar vibrations and a corresponding pull of attraction. But all souls constituting a group soul experience this drawing together in harmony towards each other, whether they are functioning in material bodies or are traversing the stages here in the life of the spirit. Group souls preside over universal movements, over great causes, and thus members of one spiritual family are often attracted to each other by mutual interests, by a special life work, as well as by eternal links. They work together, may indeed share their lives in partnership, or may only meet occasionally as they work in some particular project. Sometimes, by what appears to be a perverse fate, members of the same group are separated. Born into the apparently wrong camps. Their lives become tragic, often futile in their repeated efforts to rejoin their similar companions in their rightful work. Strangely enough, many never find their right niche. Often they live and die as outcasts. But, as the entire complement of a group soul is never in complete incarnation at the same time, that is, there is always an integrated part of the group on this side, the outcasts. After their transition here and after they have gained consciousness of their state and have attained to at least some measure of light, rejoin their own groups. Now I am conscious of your mind inquiring how many group souls are there? I cannot answer that. So far as I have gleaned, their number must be uncountable. I also understand that, at higher levels of consciousness, group souls unite to form greater units. This, I reason, must be the continued law of progress into divinity, which is a unity, a oneness, a total mysterious and glorious whole. But only thus far dare I aspire to the divine plan. Here and now I am privileged to be enabled to touch, only the fringe, of the consciousness of groups working at this level and to cooperate with them. To the extent therefore of my present comprehension I have endeavored to reply to your question. You will appreciate, I trust, that no credentials as such, except my own aspiration and reparation for past wasted opportunities, were needed for entry into my group. I was, so to speak, assimilated into it, for it was my rightful place. How, you ask, was I brought into communion with this group? Do you recall that in the early communications from the rest home to which I first graduated for service, I recounted the story of a certain doctor, the surgeon who had, whilst in the earth body, fallen a victim to drug addiction? You remember that, with him, I visited a group and was in communication with a number of advanced souls. On several visits I met and communed with these minds which have reached high standards of consciousness and wisdom. Sometimes they patiently explained group workings to me. One, a fine and illumined soul, instructed me, seek for your own place. Ask that light may open your mind to that which is for you, that your vibratory rate may be increased to respond to the vibration of your group, that you may become aware of them, for they are close beside you. For long I meditated on these words. Suddenly, as I looked upon my old friend Father Joseph when we were attending a patient in the home, I beheld, not the usual brown habit with which I have always associated him, but a surround of glorious blue which clothed him. It seemed that I looked right into him. My inner eyes were opened. I knew. His smile was gentle but all understanding as he said, "My child, welcome home." The words were sufficient, the contact was made. It had been necessary for me to await enlightenment, but he had always known. I found it difficult to leave the home and Mother Florence where I had been so happy. But the prospect of progress was inspiring. Besides, I was comforted by learning that Mother Florence would be visiting the group to which I was going from time to time, as she too was one with it, yet perforce chose to remain at her duties in the home until all her flock had been safely welcomed to this side of life. I cannot make explicit to you the mechanics of my move to the group, partly because I yet am not entirely cognizant of all that occurred myself, and partly because there is no pocket of thought in your mind which could receive such information. This I can offer for your comprehension and that of the readers. Whilst I was meditating in my golden garden, I found myself transported back to that temple of learning where once before, I dared to penetrate. Only this time, Father Joseph, I now know him by another name, was with me. Together we joined a cluster of entities about a teacher. Immediately I experienced a rise of consciousness, an upsurge of joy, a mingling of unity and harmony which colored my whole being. I cannot explain this in any other terms, though I doubt whether they will have the same connotation for you. I knew this was right for me. I had come into my own. There was no definite acceptance, the entire operation was unobtrusive and simple, yet I had the conviction that all was well, that I was amidst my fellow travelers on the way. What is this group called? I flashed silently to Father Joseph. He smiled. What you have always sought, my child, reality. Then I knew it for the extension of that reaching out for spiritual truth and creative force which, when on earth, we had termed mysticism. Here was the first phase of the search for mystical union but on a higher level, and without the incubus of earth personality and the fluctuating interference of the fleshly desire body. Have I answered your question? 15th October. This is the most satisfying stage of my progress through life and, I believe, lives, and the consequent reviewing of such lives, which my memory can, at present recall. I was always worrying, puzzling, searching in my earth life, as Francis Banks, as Sister Francis Mary and as Francis Banks again. I was never sure that I had truly found that for which I searched so eagerly. For 25 years in religion I tried earnestly to accept the concept of truth to which I had vowed myself, but nobody can know the dark nights of the soul, the loneliness, the feeling of defeat through which frustration led me during those years. Sincerely and honestly though I endeavored to believe in the life of the religious, my inner voice always urged expansion of knowledge and experience. I loved my work of teaching. I believe my teaching qualities could be assessed as good. I like knowledge for its own sake and led a useful life, no doubt, in the place to which I had been assigned. But ever the Spirit goaded me, seek and ye shall find.